Hey there, podcast listener. Steven here from the podcast you're currently listening to. You ever heard a podcast and think, I can do that? Well, maybe you can, or maybe you can't. Or maybe I can help you get started with it. Hosting is the most expensive cost you'll have in a podcast, and that's why Anchor by Spotify is the easiest way to make a podcast. Really, they have everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. With Anchor's hosting, you can distribute your podcast to other listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a whole lot more. And if you think you can do a better job than I, record a podcast right now. There's very low risk involved. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor is free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Christopher Pike of the USS Enterprise.
This is Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, Captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
Welcome, everybody, to The Away Team, a series that recaps each episode of Star Trek in canonical order with a bit of a twist. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
That you don't like about the new stuff. And, you know, the typical stuff, like I can understand what they're saying. Or they're actually talking about something, you know, blah, blah, blah. But she says, it's so interesting when you, most of the rappers nowadays, they kind of all copy each other, but that was frowned upon in the 90s. She says, and she said, it's like comic book superheroes. Like they're all so unique to each other. And I was like, I know, I know. It was great.
That's where you go. You just look at her and then you just take your hat off, put it down on the floor and go, I have nothing more to teach you.
That's right. The Padawan has become the master.
You grab your bag, you walk out the door, Lorena goes, what the fuck is going on?
I'm out. The Hulk theme's playing.
You're not even driving, you're hitchhiking down the road. It's like you're moving on.
That's right.
Lorena's left all confused, like, what the fuck just happened?
Bag slung around over my shoulder. That's all I needed. A backwards Wu-Tang hat on and shit, you know, just for effect. But we can get off of this music shit because we have some Star Trek in the new.
But before we get into Star Trek, this is episode 98. We're two episodes away from 100. Good benchmark for us. So before we get into our part three of this whole Augment series, which I'm just over. We got to talk about the Orville New Horizons from Unknown Graves. Your thoughts? Before I get into my rants.
I'm trying to even remember because I think I blocked the episode out. So one thing I noticed is that everyone loved this fucking episode. Like I've noticed that like Orville can do no wrong to a lot of people. Like, oh my God, this is so great. And it's like, so this episode had a female dominated society. That's a trope at this point, especially in sci-fi. I'm not going to say they stole it, but it's just, you know, I've seen it before. The actress that played the captain of that was probably the best on the out of everybody. But
I don't know. I kind of like the one that was trying to claim.
That was funny. There are definitely some funny moments in this. There's that one where she was trying to claim the captain to fuck him. And then there was.
If nobody claims to him, then he's mine. He will please me tonight. I was like, damn.
And then the funniest part of this entire show was when. Hold on. We gotta wind the clock a little bit.
They did use that stereotype, though.
This is a very stereotype it was almost like they this is a 90s show. It didn't bother me, but I'm surprised it didn't bother anybody else.
I basically think of every trope socially and sci-fi.
This is a sitcom.
All pulled into this episode.
So essentially you have this female dominated race and they want to open like diplomatic relations because you know the Kalon are coming basically and they're trying to get friends. So their master plan was to pretend that they too were a female dominated society. So you had Captain Mercer and what's his face, the helmsman, pretending to be
Malloy
like
and
busboys or something. And then I was like, how is this? Whatever. So the funny part is they're jogging to come get their bags or whatever, and it's too many bags. It's the typical women have too many bags joke.
Right.
And then they're falling over each other. And it was kind of funny, honestly. I thought it was funny.
When they were trying to get it into the room, he's like, to the side. I am to the side. He goes, move to the side. Right. Turn to the side.
So that's, you know, that actually is pretty much all you need to know about that storyline in this episode. This is an A and a B. There's technically a C, which lends to the B, but whatever. So the A storyline is that, and then I'll just even tell at the end, they, you know, big reveal. They say, we've been, you know, lying because we wanted to ease you in. And the fucking chick from the other planet had a good point where she goes, so you start by deceiving us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's stupid. And even the captain goes, you know, we made a mistake. I'm like, no, you're a moron.
Yeah.
This is stupid. Like, who would ever agree to this? I don't know how humanity exists in the Orville universe if they're this fucking dumb.
That was my thing, like, right from the get-go with, like, well, we're going to pretend. I was like, going, what? Like, you're going to pretend on a lie. Like, you're
the running joke. I will give credit, though, the running joke of, what's his name, the Mocklet dude or whatever.
Oh, Bordis?
Bordis kept saying, these people are so closed-minded. I thought that was funny, dude. How just blind people can be. It was just funny.
My favorite was at the end. Was like, they are horrible.
It was great. So, yeah, there's a couple funny beats in this, but the storylines are dumb. So the B storyline is insulting, to be completely honest. So to see this in a modern sci-fi, I don't even think it would be this bad in TOS Star Trek. But Isaac, he goes on a date. So the first thing we see is he's on a date with the doctor, because God forbid we don't see her fucking love affair every other episode. And she looks kind of like not happy about something, and he goes, oh, I forgot. And he they're on the holodeck.
She says, aren't you going to change?
Oh yeah, aren't you going to change? They're on their holodeck. I don't know what they call it. And he puts his human suit on, and which is the actor, no disrespect to the actor. And I go, so he's not good enough?
Yeah.
I'm like, why? I was more shocked that was there and it was okay. Like, Isaac was the one that messed up there because he didn't put his human suit on. He's not fucking human, you know, but whatever. So then we move on. We meet this random fucking Kalon that some scientists found from a crash ship. Very Borg storyline. And then she rewrote his programming to give him emotions and empathy. That part wasn't bad. You could have done a lot with that.
Yeah.
But then it became immediately the doctor's like, Isaac, don't you want to do this? Isn't this something you would want to do? And Isaac was like, no. and then she goes, well, you know, because we've been having issues emotionally. And he goes, it seems like our relationship's going just fine, you know, whatever. And she didn't like to call him an asshole. But then we have this powwow session with the doctor and the first officer,
yeah.
And she's like, I can't believe he wouldn't want to do that when he knows it's what I want. And I'm waiting for the first officer to go, you're being a selfish bitch. You're being ridiculous. No, she agreed. You know, he's an asshole. This whole episode is men are trash, essentially. And then he does do it. He changes his whole fucking thing for her. And we get this scene of that was so disgusting. It was so cheesy.
If you sat there and complained about Discovery being too emotional.
Oh my God. This was more emotional than all of season one and two of Discovery. It was ridiculous. And then you come to find out it fades away. I thought he was going to drop her because he had her mid-dip.
Yeah, I know.
They were dancing, and I would have laughed my
Which would have been funny.
But he says that he didn't feel it anymore. It was gone, and he was back to his normal self. By the way, kudos to the actor. Very smooth transition.
That transition was smooth because when he did that, I was like, uh-oh, what happened?
Big kudos to the actor. And then you find out that Isaac, unlike the other Kalon that's there, the other Kalon was one of the original built by the creators. Isaac was built by other Kalon. So it's a little different. Basically, he's got a different OS. It's not going to work.
Chrome OS, app, and it's like iOS, not compatible.
So the C, or maybe B-1, or I don't know, storyline was flashback, which actually was the most enjoyable part of the show, the episode for me.
And it humanized the Kalon.
It humanizes the Kalon. We find out why the Kalons hate their creators so much, even though there's also some weird shit in that too. So first of all, I didn't even know it was a flashback at first. They didn't make it obvious. It was just there. It was like they would keep cutting to it. I figured it out. But why did I have to figure it out?
I don't know. I got it kind of right away.
Maybe I missed a part. Maybe I wasn't looking at the screen or something. But I just noticed that they were bringing home a fucking...
Well, they didn't mention like, hey, this happened, it was like so many years ago. It just kind of happened on the screen. But I guess I've watched enough of various television episodes where I can see when they're doing kind of a flashback. You know, I was like, oh, this is a flashback. Because I figure they're at war.
Maybe I'm dumb. But it didn't take me until halfway through that episode to go, is this the past?
Are you from the past?
I think they got to a point that they started saying things that like clicked, but whatever. But they bring this family who seems like a very nice, sweet family. You're almost the American dream, boy and girl, and the couple, and it's an alien race, obviously. And the father brings home this big ass box, and it's got a Kalon inside of it. And he's like, this is going to change our lives, you know. And it shows that they were basically like house robots to take care of stuff and blah, blah, blah. So you start seeing throughout the course of the storyline that the Kalon is becoming sentient because he's asking questions like, is this all I do here? Or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the father just gets irritated. The parents are kind of like, what's wrong with this thing? You know, it's broken, which honestly is a logical response up to that point, because you bought a toy or a tool,
right?
And now it's starting to ask you weird questions. The average person is going to go, oh no, maybe this is becoming sentient. The average person is going to think it's broken.
Well, no, because you think about remember what we were talking about before we recorded any of the shows? We were talking about society. This would be modern society. It's broken. They wouldn't think anything like, it's broken, is this become sentient? Is this become sentient? Nobody's going to think that.
This would be most people now.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily make them evil.
Like, with the exception of like you and me. We'd be like, I think this is fucking Skynet.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily make them evil to have that reaction. It's just they're not equipped to really think about things that way. You know, it's almost if you put your toast in there and it just kept spitting the toast out, you wouldn't immediately go, maybe it's not feeling like it wants to toast bread. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway.
You put toast, it spits it out. It's like, seriously, you should eat wheat.
Yeah. So you start seeing that they can we get up to a point in the main story where the other Kalon is explaining to Charlie, that's her name, right?
Yeah.
The one who always has a chip on her shoulder with Isaac. Why his race, because this emotional Kalon doesn't hate biologicals because it has empathy now.
Like the fact that he said, I'm not, when she's like, you're trying to apologize. No, I'm not trying to apologize. I was glad that was good. I liked that part.
That was great. Don't apologize for shit. You didn't do anything. You know, because his whole point was everyone should be judged individually while the Kalons are judging all biological life based on their creators. Right. So we're getting this big backstory. So now he's explaining more directly what's going on. So you find out that the Kalons start to figure out that they can communicate with each other through the charging pods. That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
And then they all devise a plan. Oh, no, I'm skipping a part. So the developer of the Kalons, his solution to sentience, and his assistant hated this idea, by the way, was he was going to do an update. They don't tell you right away. And she's like, I'm not for this. This is ridiculous. And he's like, well, whatever. They'll step in line. He developed pain for a machine so they could have a little remote. And if it asks too many questions or doesn't do what it's told, they just press the remote, the button, and it just collapses in pain. I was like, what? Like they basically, if you would think in the terms of slavery, they invented the whip.
Yeah.
Essentially. And then you see the two kids were playing with it. Where it's like, oh, you were too slow. And they just kept hitting it. And honestly, one of the saddest things I've seen on television. Like, I'm not saying that was bad, like bad TV, but it was horrifying to watch that. Like, I was like, Jesus. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But then the Kalon still doesn't have emotions. So it made it even more tragic because please refrain from falling on the ground. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, these people are fucking horrifying. So anyway. This is why it humanizes the Kalons. He's like, you know what? I get it now. Fuck these people. Here's where it stuff.
I actually said, yo, fuck biologicals, man. This is bullshit. For real. Like,
I almost jumped off the roof, but damn self. The Kalons, you know, they can now communicate with you. They devise a plan to rise up against their creators. Now, this rise up is just murder them. Why did the builders of the Kalons put big guns in their head?
No fucking clue.
I was like, were they supposed to be like a guard dog too? But even then, that's a little excessive, don't you think?
Yeah, well, think of the Second Amendment here. You know, it's
the
like
show got dark. So he shoots the parents, and then he shot the kids, kind of off camera. But you saw that he did it. I was like, whoa, okay. As we're getting a little dark here, but fuck those damn kids.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I've never cheered at kids being murdered before, but I was like, fuck
those
them.
Kids were
like,
assholes.
Fuck those guys, man.
You know, and I don't fully agree that – I know there are a good amount of people that would do that, that would treat machines like shit, even if they were being sentient. I know that. But there's a large amount of people that won't, because humans have this weird – thing where they humanize inanimate objects.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we heard about that traveling robot and it got once it got to Philly, it got fucking all fucked up.
It made it through Canada all from coast to coast. Didn't even make it partway through the United States. Kind of shows you where we are.
If we could look at it from a different perspective, the majority of its trip it was fine. And then towards the tail end it went to a bad neighborhood to get fucked up. You know, so whatever. But then so we find that out, you know, and then now Charlie understands a little bit more of the context of the situation and this and that. And then they have a little moment, which I thought that moment that they had was nice. I didn't have any problem with that, where she goes, she kind of just goes in there and like, how you doing kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then she goes, can I help you? And he goes, you're
primitive of mind.
Your inferior intellect will slow me down. And she just kind of goes, eh. But then
but it was kind of funny because she kind of just was like, all right, that's fair. Like, kind of like, like I kind of deserve that kind of thing.
So she kind of apologizes for treating him like shit. And he accepts the apology. And then she's walking away and he goes, maybe you can help me, which I thought was a big step for Isaac.
Yeah.
Because he didn't need to do that. So that was cool. I liked that whole storyline. When it ended with Charlie and Isaac and the whole flashback thing, that was solid. The rest of it, absolute garbage. It was the worst episode of the show I've ever
seen. The one thing you forgot, which I thought you were going to touch on, but once Isaac lost all the emotion, they said it. You know, his OS was incompatible, but they could fix it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They could fix it, but Isaac would lose his entire memory.
And he was willing to do it. He was like, it's fine. If it basically, will make you happy,
basically
I'll
he
do
was
it.
Simping. He was simping hard.
And
that pussy must be doctor, good. I'm just saying. Like,
I'm just saying, bro. The doctor. Oh, there was actually a fourth storyline that was good too, because it was funny. The doctor didn't go along with it, and she kind of came to her senses at the end, but you could tell she was going to. Like, she was like, oh, okay, well, then just do it. Like, she wanted to do that, you know, and if it would have turned it out, I would have turned that shit off without even finishing it.
Yeah.
Because the whole, I was texting Steve while I was watching it, and I was like, is he not good enough? Like,
right.
This is stupid to watch. It wasn't the kind of storytelling you would expect from a science fiction show, because it wasn't very forward thinking. It was like the way you are is trash. You need to be like everybody else.
And the thing is, and I told Adam first off, I go, okay, so, you know, because he has said, he goes, I'm not going to say they borrowed from TNG. I'm not going to be that nice. I'm going to say they lifted lore. They lifted the woman, female dominated species. What was the other one? That whole thing with the emotion chip. So for me, I lost interest halfway through. The only interest that I had in the show was some of the jokes that went on, which caught me, especially Bordis, and the backstory for the Kalon. The rest of this shit seemed like it was filler for the Kalon story. But the biggest issue I had is, you know, everybody likes to say, oh, this is a Star Trek show. This is how Star Trek. Yeah, maybe season one or two, where it was kind of like, what the fuck?
Yeah, this isn't happened? A Star Trek show at all.
Yeah, because to me, you know, the reason Isaac is Data is to do that whole, it's that trope of human emotion, how to do that. Fortunately, Star Trek went past that after they got rid of Data. But they've had that with, you know, Seven, you know, and then they kind of got rid of it after that. But the thing is that for me, the reason why Data was done better is because Data wanted to be human. I could see this playing out as a Data thing. And Data saying, well, yeah, I want to do this. But we have seen Data do this because of the emotion chip, where he just put it away and didn't use it.
And well, Data, and I remember texting you, the difference was Data wanted to be human, but everyone, his friends who were human or whatever race they were in Star Trek, were saying, you're good enough as you are, but right. We do support you in whatever you want to do. That is science fiction.
Yeah.
That's what I want the future to look like. In this one, Isaac didn't want to change,
right.
But everyone else wanted him to, which is garbage.
And then the whole bullshit on how they reconciled that negotiation was like, he was faithful, I cheated on him. You know, it's like, but no, they were...
That didn't...
To me, that was...
It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, well, that's the thing, and that's why I said it's bullshit, is because, yeah, it didn't make any sense, because what was that supposed to prove? Because... She, you know, it's like going, well, he was faithful, so I don't understand that they worked together because she cheated on him and he's a commanding officer, blah, blah, blah. It's like going, that has nothing to do with anything.
And they had already just told us before that in their culture, men have to be faithful, but the women can fuck whoever they want.
Right.
So if based on that logic, once she says I cheated on him when he was faithful, they should have been like, uh-huh.
Yeah, they would have been like, and?
It would mean literally nothing to them.
Right. So
it's another Saturday.
Yeah. You know? That's why I was kind of like, I was like going, what the fuck? And then the whole girl powwow of making the guy change. I go, that's supposed to be the stereotype. You're supposed to be promoting, hey, but isn't he good enough the way he is? You know, this is a choice you really have to make. But, you know, making him change, making him be something just for your comfort, does that mean that the relationship has limits? Maybe you guys shouldn't be together if that's what's holding you back. That should have been the thing, but I don't know what happened to Seth and in that logic, but that just went completely different. And nobody had any, like, I don't think this would work this way. You know, the Kalon thing, that whole thing was great. And it just kind of reminded you that, you know, how corporations put things before him. And this was just, that was a very cool allegory of like going, you know, like, well, you know how much business we would lose if we had to recall them. It's like, see, and that's what happens. you know,
it's realistic.
It's realistic in that we can see that happening, you know.
And the fourth story was it was funny, but it was the chief engineer's little relationship with the security, and he keeps every time they fuck, he gets hurt, like a broken leg or whatever. That was funny, but it's not a plus or minus for the show because it's one of those side beats that could have been in any episode.
Yeah. And not to mention, why didn't he just say, you know, they were together? It's like, I don't understand. It's like they're both not,
maybe because they're both senior officers, something like that.
Yeah, but they're not, that didn't make sense to me. But Kelly and what's Ed, you know, first officer and captain, and they're a divorced couple.
I didn't really think about that much because there's just some people that don't want to announce their relationships at work.
Hmm.
I don't. But when I started dating my wife, I didn't come and tell everybody I am now dating this woman.
But yeah, but that's different because you guys aren't on a ship, you know, where you're.
Or you just mean people would have found out.
Well, not even that, but just like, you know, you're on a ship. They haven't made any kind of, and he didn't even say any rules like, well, we can't have anybody find out because then something's going to happen. They just like, okay, look, you know, you're telling the doctors, like, what the fuck? You keep coming in here. You're saying, oh, I'm doing these special. It's like, fuck you, dude. You're not doing these special calisthenics. Come on.
Yeah, I guess I just didn't think about it. But yeah.
Yeah. But
it was funny, but it wasn't useful to the plot. So it doesn't really matter.
But the whole Isaac thing, I like the fact that the Kalon didn't apologize for anything. He just showed empathy. I think that was good. And now we can finally stop hearing that chick bitch all the time about fucking...
Do you know that McFarlane is dating her?
Is he?
Yeah, and he was dating the previous security chick.
Yeah, he likes him young, huh?
I mean, good for him. Yeah. You know, it's American dream. But... yeah, well, people on. So I don't care if he's. That's none of my business. It has really nothing to do with the show. But now everyone's like, oh, she's a bitch because she shouldn't. She's a horrible fucking actress and she's only on there because she's fucking this. I'm like, she's playing a bitch.
Yeah.
Calm down. she's playing the character as it's written.
Also, relax. Also, it's Hollywood. Somebody's dating somebody on set.
Well, to me, it's like. You're working together. Like, I don't know. Like I found my wife at work, you know? So it's like,
well, yeah, you spend most of your time there.
Yeah. You spend most of your time there. You're most people start dating at work unless they're one of those people like, I don't shit where I eat.
One of my exes loved Seth MacFarlane and she's like going, God, he's so funny and he's talented and he's a musician and he sings so well. She's like, why doesn't he just come out as being gay? I'd feel better about that. I'm like, why? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
heterosexual men can't be talented or anything anymore. You know, it has to be gay guys. Whatever. I said we weren't even going to talk that much about the show. We basically just went over the whole fucking thing.
I told you.
I think. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I told Adam that I actually disliked this episode more than the first of the season.
I did too.
Yeah.
Well, you told me that before I had seen it. That's why I didn't agree with you because I hadn't seen it yet.
Well, no, you said you didn't disagree with me. You just said, I'll watch it later. You didn't.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. I didn't agree or disagree because I hadn't seen it. But the first episode was a mess.
Right.
But it wasn't bad. It was just a mess.
There was only one part two parts that didn't make sense. Them keeping Isaac on there and then Isaac committing suicide.
Yeah. Like what? The weird thing is I've noticed with the show, and good for the show, has a very loyal fan base.
Yeah.
No one critiques it. You know, it's just everything's perfect. And it's one thing with this episode where – and usually I don't care. Everybody can have their opinion. Their opinion doesn't matter to me. But this one I kind of was like, why? Because we just – the same people were praising the trans episode when this one has a completely different tone. That's altered to that. I guess it's different because he's an alien, so fuck him. I don't know. But it's just that part in this episode bothered me. And how we're supposed to love this doctor and supposed to be so fucking great. And she's just a pouty bitch all the time. Like this entire thing was stereotypical. The doctor was acting stereotypical of what people say women are. Like they just think about themselves and you demand that you change. And then The whole fucking episode was stupid.
It would have been at least a little bit better if the doctor, if Claire at the end just said, you know, I shouldn't have made you get the emotion anyway. I was wrong.
Which she kind of said, but she should have said it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this episode would have been better if they cut out all the bullshit and just expanded on the backstory of the Kalon.
Yeah.
Because I really thought that was good. And it's something that I've always thought the show kind of lacked was fleshing out the universe, which I have to backtrack on that a little bit too, because if you watch like TOS, it wasn't like you knew the map of the fucking quadrant back then. You know what I mean? I think I get spoiled with 90s Trek really flesh that shit out. You know what I mean?
And then also you get the same thing with even Star Wars, a lot of the EU, the extended universe with books and stuff like that. You know, you got more stuff fleshed out. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, I thought we had passed the worst of the season. And it sucks because we had, you know, such a good chunk of really good episodes. Yeah, I mean, even the Gordon storyline from last week, you know, was kind of like,
it was all right.
It was all
right. Like, it had its problems, but it wasn't something that wasn't entertaining to watch.
Right.
This was like, and I
this made no sense whatsoever.
Like, I was on YouTube with you with that too, because like halfway through the episode, the only reason I was watching it is because I knew we were going to bring it up.
Yeah.
I would have turned it off or just walked away because it wasn't good. It was just really bad. And then usually when I'm watching something that pisses me off, like the whole Isaac thing, I'll just stop watching it.
Yeah.
I won't see it through. Why? Like, it's not entertaining me, so I'll go do something else.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, I don't know, man. And then you were telling me that everyone's being released from their contract after this season. Like, I think this show's dead.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going anywhere. Because
they said that. Because what I read was somebody was from an article an interview that Seth MacFarlane had given, and they said that, you know, this isn't a finale, this isn't a final season, but I think everybody's focusing on stuff. And I think the pandemic really had a lot to do with it, because there was a time that this was supposed to be, and they could have done a four, but, you know, maybe the show's too expensive, or they're going to see if the impact is really well on it. But they said that their contracts were only good for an additional season. And, you know, that they said that, you know, Hulu's saying that, like, you know, they're not can't writing it off. And they said it's not going to be left like with a cliffhanger or something like that. I think this is supposed to be a complete season. But every season that they've had has always been a season like, this is the end. If this is the end.
Because they never know it's going to keep going.
Yeah.
I think the problem, too, and when The Orville first came out, for better or for worse, whether you agree or not, it did fill a niche of that quote unquote old Trek, because the Orville felt like 90s Trek.
Right. Okay.
A little bit more slapstick, but it felt like 90s Trek. Now you have two different things. One, the whole old school feel of Trek is already back with Trek. You have Strange New Worlds and even fucking Lower Decks.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Lower Decks is a little bit more zany, but it is through and through 90s
people kind
Trek.
Of want, I think people kind of wanted to see a Family Guy version of Star Trek, which was advertised as the Orville.
Right. And that leads into the second problem. They are no longer doing that.
Yeah.
Now they're trying to make more serious stuff. And that's fine. I don't mind them doing that. You know, it's its own show. It's not – you don't always have to say it's Trek, Trek, Trek. But the problem is most of the fans from it when it first came out was because it was like old Trek.
Right.
So now that it's not, there's really – it doesn't have that niche anymore.
I think the only people that are coming to it are people that have been with it for a while. And the thing, too, is that even some of the episodes, it's been so long since season two, much less season one, that they're referring to characters from that. And that has to rely on the ability of that you've watched the other ones because you're on Hulu.
Well, like that episode – and it wasn't a bad episode – but the one where the war with the other dude started again because the uprising on the alien planet. And that main character was one from way back. I had no fucking idea who that chick was. Like, that was too long ago.
Yeah.
I had to go look it up on a wiki somewhere after you had mentioned it. Because I was like, what? And then it loses that impact.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But for me, as soon as I found out that they're probably not going to come back or it's going to be a super long gap, I just don't really care about the show as much. I still enjoy it. You know, I'll watch it when it comes out. But it doesn't seem like every season, it doesn't seem like they really are committing to more of it. they're always like, well, you know, we'll make it if you want.
Well, that was the whole thing. It left Fox was because Fox wanted third season of The Orville to come out at a certain time frame. And he had said that with his other projects and stuff like that, he wouldn't be able to deliver it in time, at least to what he wanted. And then they got over to Hulu or Disney, and then COVID happened, and that took 2 extra years on there because they were just starting to film when COVID hit. So it's
like, and the show is definitely not all their fault that there's been some issues. It's COVID. It's the Fox merger. It's all kinds of shit.
Yeah,
you know. But I don't know, man. I feel like it's just gonna fade out.
Oh, and I found out from Seth MacFarlane. Not that I talked to him, but I saw an interview with him.
Hanging out or what?
Yeah, you know, we chilling and but that whole New Horizons things where everybody's like, oh, was it the whole New Horizons? It's nothing. It was just somebody that's at Disney that was like, oh, you should call it New Horizons. And he's like, yeah, he thought that sounded cool. And that's why.
Yeah, and stuff like that irritates me.
Yeah.
Because the title New Horizons, you knew damn right well what people will think when they read that. They'll think that something new is starting. Nothing new is starting.
Yeah.
You're just making another season for no reason whatsoever. Like,
yeah, because on Hulu, it's season one, season two, and New Horizons. It's not even season three.
Yeah, so, which makes it sound like it's almost like they're made like the way they presented it was almost like to use Trek. I'm not trying to compare it to Trek, but it's the most similar thing.
It's a Trek podcast, so you're gonna
right when like Voyager came out, it was like a whole new show, but that's kind of how the New Horizons thing was being shown. Like, this is all new, everything's fresh, bigger budgets, blah blah blah. That's cool for like what, 10-11 episodes, and then we're just gonna die off again, like whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is 10 episodes this season, so we're almost
you can't expect me to invest myself into something if you're not investing yourself into it. You know, I just don't care. So it also reminds me, as always, I still haven't watched the fucking Expanse, and I want to watch it.
All right. So just to kind of clarify some of this, because I know when some people say, I love pancakes, that means you hate waffles. We're saying that we did not particularly like this episode. But that does not mean we don't like the Orville.
Yeah, and my being upset about the Orville right now is I'm upset that they're not going to make more of it.
Right.
Like, I really wanted it to keep going, but, you know, it is what it is, bro. Anyway, let's move on to another show that has a bright future ahead of it, Star Trek Enterprise. this is...
A bright future ahead of it, huh?
Right. This is The Augments, episode 6 of season 4, first aired on November 12, 2004. This is also the finale of the Augments, or the Soong's Augments arc, but it is the third episode in the overall Augments arc.
Thankfully.
Directed by big homie LeVar Burton.
UPN Friday.
Murdering hostages is turning into a new hobby for you.
A biological terror strike that may destroy an entire planet.
What you're proposing is mass murder.
And fuel generations of hatred.
Klingons will keep Starfleet busy for years.
Surrender, or we'll destroy your ship.
The bomb!
Brent Spiner returns in the stunning conclusion of a Star Trek event.
Kuta Kinte's directing. The thing, real quick, I'm gonna.
When you said that, I was watching Coming to America the other day, when Eddie Murphy comes into the barbershop and the Jewish guy, which is played by Eddie Murphy, like, hey, yeah. Kuta Kinte.
It was so funny. This episode is not a bad episode per se, other than the stuff that carried over from the last two episodes that are kind of whatever. It's just super campy, but it's the whole episode. You're like, I just want this to be over. The story's just not good. Like, the acting's fine, but the story's just not that great. The end of it is my favorite part because they do some callbacks to shit.
You know, oh, yeah. Whatever. I thought you said the ending is my favorite part because it's the end.
Well, I mean that too. Dr. Soon's augments acquire additional augment embryos as well as biological weapons from Cold Station 12. a desperate plan is devised to use the biological weapons to foment a war between the Klingons and Earth in an attempt to flee Earth's control forever, part 3 of 3. So the teaser. Captain Jonathan Archer has just reached the primary junction in the central core of Cold Station 12. The captain has 40 seconds to divert the power to the secondary relays in order to isolate the central lab and keep hundreds of lethal pathogens from reaching the lab personnel, as well as the Enterprise away team inside the lab. This is the end. This is tying up the end of the second episode, which is weird. It was just weird that this was in the teaser and not in the last episode, but I guess they needed a cliffhanger.
They needed the da-da-da.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, the captain can't completely stop the pathogens from being released. As the clock reaches zero, he's informed by Dr. Jeremy Lucas that the ventilation grid will carry the pathogens throughout the rest of the station, including the central core. At that point, he has less than a minute before he becomes contaminated. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Act motherfucking one. Because Enterprise, situated nearby, is unable to obtain a transporter lock, never can when it needs it, you know?
You're right.
Archer, due to interference within the central core, Archer orders Commander T'Pol to fire the starship's phase cannons at exterior hatch J9 to decompress the station's central core. As the pathogens begin to be released, Enterprise destroys the top of the shaft where Archer is located. The captain is blown out of the central core due to the decompression. As he clears the top of the central core into space, Archer is quickly beamed back aboard Enterprise by Commander Tucker. That's actually kind of a slick. I thought that was slick. Like, that whole plan was kind of dope. It was very fucking like 80s action star, but still, it was kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, and it all had to work perfectly.
Exactly. And he was on the pad looking like a fucking popsicle from being out in the... They threw some fucking dust in his hair. It's here. Just lay here looking weird, bro. The augment's stolen Klingon bird of prey just crossed into Klingon space. Dr. Eric Soong goes to the bridge and Malik informs him. With a glare resulting from the conflict between them, he takes the captain's chair and asks about the Enterprise. Malik informs him, who's like, get the fuck out of my chair, bitch, what the fuck? Malik informs him that the ship is holding its position. Soong notes that Archer's not foolish enough to follow us. Malik responds that they won't see Archer again, as Malik believes Archer is dead. This triggers an angry confrontation between Dr. Soong and Malik. This the whole part of this whole augment series I did like was how Soong didn't want anyone to – they didn't want the augments to kill anybody. And when they did, he got super mad. And you start to realize it's because he's trying to prove that they're not murderous assholes.
And one thing that I thought was kind of funny about that whole thing was the fact that he wanted them to be different, but yet all he taught them was just how much humans hated them. Right. So it's kind of like, how did you expect to, you know, get them to the, was like going, yes, you need to learn about your past, but these are the mistakes they made. So we need to make sure that these mistakes don't happen. And then when right. you have someone like Malik,
we do get some good, like, and this is very prevalent in the fourth season of this show anyway, we get some backstory on the augments, which I enjoy, and I like that stuff, but the rest of the show is kind of whatever. Triggers the internet. Dr. Soong becomes furious, shouting, no one was to be killed without my express order. When Malik tries to excuse his actions, Soong interrupts and tells Malik that if Malik just disobeys him again, that he'll lock Malik. How many times are we gonna say Malik, Pim? I understand who the topic of the sentence is. I'm gonna get the red pen out. I'm gonna start underlining shit.
Remember, it's a computer screen.
Yeah, you're damn right. In the Bird of Prey's targ pit, where Malik won't see the light of day for a month. By the way, that's a quick little Star Trek trivia for you. Every Bird of Prey does have a targ pit.
Yeah.
So just letting you know.
It's like a ship mascot.
Just like the Enterprise D had in Aquatics, where dolphins were present. So, you know, it's fun. Still in a state of anger and unsatisfied with the ship's lack of speed, Soong attempts to reassert authority over Malik by ordering him to engineering to repair the post-inducer assembly. It's kind of a dick move. It's like, but I'm not in engineering. He's like, you're a smart boy. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, wow, bro. All right. A little petty, but I get it, you know. Meanwhile, still in...
But isn't that like a dad, though?
Yeah, I do this shit all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You humble them, you know, when they get a little too big.
Right.
Oh,
you think you can take dad? You think you can take dad? How about taking down his friend first? Before you get a shot at the title.
That's right. Meanwhile, still in temporary command of Enterprise, T'Pol records a log entry. And I quote, "First officer's log, supplemental. We've evacuated the away team and all personnel from the station. The captain shows no sign of infection. He's recovering in sickbay." Very T'Pol. There's your information.
Right.
Archer T'Pol, Dr. Phlox, Lieutenant Malcolm Reed, and Commander Charles Tucker discuss plans to stop Soong and his augments in Enterprise's sickbay. Reed notes there are a half dozen Klingon patrols that will intercept Enterprise if it follows the augment stolen bird of prey into Klingon space. To better the odds of Enterprise's favor, the Starfleet officer decides to emulate a Klingon warp signature. This was kind of funny. In order to slip past the Klingon patrols. First of all, we're going to get to it, but let me just real quick, as a teaser to what I'm going to read soon. Archer's many things, but a believable Klingon he is not.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, I don't know. T'Pol reports that Dr. Lucas and his team are anticipating their return to Cold Station 12 to begin decontamination of the station. Commander Tucker notes that's quite a mess they gotta clean up. That's a quote. T'Pol says that Lucas estimates it will take more than a year to fully decontaminate the facility. On the bird of prey, Soong talks of taking the augments to an area flooded with radiation from supernova remnant. He refers to it by its Klingon name of Klaktakal Brach. I'm pretty sure is how you pronounce that. Or more colloquially as the Briar Patch. Callback. I like that.
I was waiting for them the joystick to come out of the floor, and then you just see Archer trying to take it into the Briar Patch. You know?
I'm not gonna lie. My joystick went up half mass at least when I heard Briar Patch. I just like those little callbacks. Any Star Trek fan, you hear a call like that, you're like, oh, you turn into that meme with what's his name, Leo DiCaprio pointing at the TV. Oh, shit.
I know. I did that. I think I did that twice in this episode.
Yeah. Soong knows that there are sides of at least two habitable planets, and it would be difficult to find them within the cloud of radiation. Malik impatiently interrupts Soong with, "This is your plan? To hide again?" This dude writes in a lot of quotes. Soong tries to explain the need of a safe haven for the embryos to develop. Malik tries to reason with Soong that Starfleet won't give up, that they'll send other ships to pursue them, that the gas cloud won't protect them. Soong asks Malik what he would do, but Malik is uncertain, only that running away is not the answer. See, basically he's complaining, but he doesn't have a solution.
Typical kid.
And Soong called him on it. And I've also done this to my kids, where they don't like a decision I'm making. They're not assholes like Malik is, but they'll say it, and I go, "Okay, what's your solution?" They go, "I don't have one." I go, "Well, then I guess we're going to have to use mine." And that's the end of the conversation.
Well, that's like, if you think about it, that's still relevant now, right? When you have people that complain about political or social stuff going on now. It's like, okay, well, what do you want? Well, I don't know. It's like, well,
it's
then.
Anything.
Yeah.
Like, don't complain unless it's constructive. If you're just whining, save that for your friends when you're drinking or you're having a good time. Don't come to a public place and complain about something and not have a solution in mind. Even especially with politics, like, even if you're not able to implement said solution, you sound like an idiot if you're complaining about something and you have no idea how to fix it.
Yeah.
Like, you have none of your own thoughts. You just want to bitch. Anyway, moving on. Sorry.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Right. Malak tries to reason with Soong that Starfleet, blah, 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 blah. I already read that. Soong asks Malak what he would do. Malak's uncertain. Only that running away is not the answer. Malak then asks if Soong is familiar with Botany Bay, another point at the TV moment. Exactly. A, quote, pre-warp vessel launched at the end of the Great Wars, end quote. Malak goes on to recount how the vessel left with many of their brethren, including their leader, Khan Noonien Singh. Soong states that the Botany Bay is a myth and that there is no evidence it ever existed.
I like that part because they never really mentioned that before, but to know that that might be a myth, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too. And it also explains that in that TNG episode, why no one was really looking for it. Yeah. But they just kind of found it. It also, I mean,
you mean TOS? You mean TOS?
Oh, TOS, my bad. I'm thinking, you know what I'm thinking of is the episode where they find the people from the 20th century.
Oh, the neutral zone? The neutral zone?
Yeah, yeah. My bad. Anyway, Steve corrected me like it was an emergency. TOS, TOS, you mean TOS? I was like, oh shit, I'm sorry.
Actually, it was in the original series that
let me push my glasses up.
You know?
I was wrong.
I pushed my glasses up.
I mean, you know, you have to. Yeah. It's for effect. Botany Bay is not as common. Okay. But his point is that Khan made the fatal mistake of running away from his enemies on Earth rather than facing them. What, didn't he not run away? Wasn't he like cast out or something? I don't remember.
Who?
Singh.
Yeah, I thought that was his punishment. He was cast out.
Yeah, like he was sent away from Earth. Yeah. They didn't want to deal with him anymore. I don't think he ran away from anything.
One thing I forgot to bring up in the last episode that I thought about was in Strange New World. I'm just kidding. When they said about the embryos and they said that, why didn't you destroy them? And then Archer goes, well, there was some debate on that. I was like, yes, it was the Christian right that debated that one, I'm sure. No, because the embryos, you can't destroy them because they're life, right?
Every single episode we do, you tie to current politics. And honestly, it's impressive.
because I'm
impressed every time.
Well, no, because I mean, because the thing is, what other debate would you have about destroying the embryos that were augments? If you banned augments, if augments are banned,
yeah, it's solid. It makes sense.
That's what I was saying. I wasn't trying to be like, you know, like trying to turn it. I was just letting you know, like, no, I thought that was kind of because he said.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm impressed because it makes sense. That's why. Yeah, there's no other argument. I mean, it's probably just people felt soft for him, I guess, and it was like, no,
there was some other faction of them like, no, we can't get rid of them because we need to learn their side of the story.
That's right. Malak does not want to make that same mistake, but instead wants to face Starfleet rather than consistently running and hiding. Soong ends the argument by stating that the matter is not open to debate. Another father thing to say. Mm-hmm. He orders the ship to head to the Briar Patch.
Keep it up. Keep it up, and I'm going to dock you your allowance this week.
I say that too, but I usually say something more to the effect of, I didn't ask for your opinion. I'm telling you what to do. And or, they go, oh, okay. I was mistaken.
Is where you look around and you go, who are you?
I tell it because I actually like with my kids, like real quick, because this is a parenting podcast, but with my kids, I do like them to like tell me like how they feel about something, you know, because it's just healthy. But sometimes I'll tell them, it's like, all right, I'm going to pull rank on this one. You're just going to do what I say because you're wrong. So I need you to just do. I'm going to use the wisdom I have.
Okay? I can't tell you what I say. I don't have the verbal skills to tell you how wrong you are.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to tell you you're wrong, and let's just leave it at that.
With six kids, I don't have the time to tell you why you're wrong. So you're just wrong. We're moving on. I have to go deal with the other kids.
You don't have the time, and I don't have the patience.
Right. As the augments head towards the Briar Patch, Enterprise positions itself on the border to Klingon space. Commander Tucker reports that the warp coils have been realigned to look like a Klingon battlecruiser, which is Star Trek trickery, really. Yeah. I don't know how they would be able to do that.
I never remembered in any Trek episode where they're able to mask them and make them look like You think in TNG they would have done that a few times, you know?
Well, the thing is, they have view screens.
It's not... Let's just hope nobody looks out a window, you know?
Right. Like, I know that, I know in Future Trek, like, the view screen is actually... Because they did it in TNG when they were doing the war games, and they made the sensors... They made, like, a sensor ghost.
Right.
They didn't make their ship look different, but they made it look like a Romulan ship was coming up. And they saw it on the screen. However, we do know in canon, I'm getting real nerdy. We do know canonically that in TOS, that bitch was a window.
Yeah.
So how's this work? I don't. You know what I mean? The Klingon ships don't got windows because I know they got a view screen. It's a tiny one. I always make fun of it when I see it. Yeah. Where am I? Fuck. Oh, okay. Warp was realigned to look like a Klingon battlecruiser. But Commander Tucker warns the captain, this trick's not gonna, I like how he types it, gonna. this trip's not gonna work if we get within 80,000 kilometers. The captain puts the Enterprise on tactical alert and orders a course into Klingon territory at warp 4. Meanwhile, on Star Trek. Meanwhile, back on the Bird of Prey, Malik enters Soong's temporary laboratory. Soong tells Malik, you have to stop challenging my authority in front of the others. Malik responds with, can't a son disagree with his father? I thought we were family. Soong tells Malik he's willing to overlook what he's done up to that point, but that Malik has to trust that Soong knows what is best for the group. Soong says, you used to have faith in me. And Malik replies, I was a child then. I didn't know any better. This is literally, it might as well be an episode of Seventh Heaven at this point.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a teenage Soong, thing.
Yeah, it's teenage shit. Like, I'm a man now. I know what you're doing. Like, you shit. You don't know anything.
I'm 13. I'm not a kid anymore.
Right. You know what's funny is all those, like, tropes of kids just being terrible never happened in my household, all but one kid. And it was because she watched too much TV. And she would behave weirdly. And I'm like, what sitcom did you watch today? Because you're not making any sense. Soong begins to talk about how it wasn't easy after he left. But Malik interrupts by asking about the embryos. Malik realizes Soong is manipulating the embryo's DNA to remove aggression and violent behavior. Malik says, you're changing its personality, to which Soong replies, I'm correcting a defect in its genome. Soong goes on to tell Malik that genetic engineering was in its infancy when he was conceived, and that they weren't able to correct all the mistakes. Malik takes exception to this analysis. He says, what right do you have to tamper with their genome? Which I thought was funny because these embryos are genetically enhanced.
Right.
So
it's not like they're pure, you know. It's, yeah, I thought that too, because because when he said that, I was like going, but you're genetically modified.
That would have been my, if I was Soong, I would have went, you're what? Like, you're not even supposed to be here. Soong replies, trust me, I know what I'm doing, which is a common reply for Soong. Malik retorts, you don't know that this is a defect. Maybe this is the way our creators wanted us to be. It is, which is why the eugenics wars happened.
Right.
Read a history book. The discussion is read a history pad. The discussion is interrupted by a signal from the bridge. A ship is approaching at high warp. The ship is quickly identified as Enterprise. Soong orders an increase in speed as Enterprise arms torpedoes, and Captain Archer orders Soong to drop out of warp or face the consequences. Malik is in shock. As Soong remarks, Archer sounds pretty confident for a dead man.
I love that dig. That was a great dig where he's like, oh, yeah, he sounds pretty alive for a dead man.
Like, wow, looks like shit didn't work out the way you fucking said.
That's why you don't have a kid make the big decisions.
Exactly. Why don't you leave this up to the adults, Junior? Go sit the fuck down. The augments shoot first with little effect. Enterprise returns fire, causing aft damage to the Bird of Prey. Also, these two episodes show that the Bird of Prey really ain't shit. Like, I'm trying to remember. Its firepower, I think, is pretty good. It's either on par or better than the Enterprise, but its defense is not. But the Bird of Prey really isn't designed for defense.
No, it's designed for war.
Just war, like
an offensor. Offensive.
Right, exactly.
Damn it. I guess I had a stroke somewhere.
Like, we'll get through this together. It's not a big deal. You know, I'm here for you. The occupants shoot first, little effect. Enterprise returns fire, causing half damage to the bird of prey. Malik wants to engage Enterprise. This is still Act 1.
This is still Act 1?
Yes.
Holy shit.
While Soong does not, noting Enterprise's outguns them 3-1 in desperation, Soong orders that the Denoblium pilot be placed on board the shuttle. The bird of prey makes a detour to a star system with a gas giant, where Soong ejects the shuttle into the gas giant's atmosphere between two thermal layers. Enterprise, following, sees everything. Soong hails the Enterprise, telling Archer that the shuttle pilot is fine and will stay that way for the 4 or 5 hours it will take Archer to mount a rescue. Archer acknowledges the situation he's in, allowing Soong to escape, which, though he warns the doctor, this isn't over. I thought that was kind of a slick way to escape, to be honest.
Yeah.
Holy shit, why is this? Well, the other acts are pretty short, actually. He just crammed everything in Act 1.
Act 2. a lot of that extra dialogue.
Yeah, that's true. It gets real punchy now. While the Enterprise works to rescue the Denoblian, Soong and the augments are working on repairs to the Bird of Prey. Malik has worked to cloak the warp trail so that Enterprise cannot easily reacquire their position. Malik quickly tells Soong of the 24 canisters of biogenic agents he beamed aboard the ship from Cold Station 12. Soong is immediately horrified by the act. Malik tells Soong the biogenic agents can be placed aboard a torpedo to create a bioweapon, and Soong assumes Malik means to fire it at the Enterprise. Malik quickly fills Soong in on his idea to fire it at the nearby Klingon colony named Quivat. Malik quickly outlines how hitting the colony with the agents would kill every living thing. Malik's reasoning is that once the Klingons learn it was humans who decimated their colony, they would declare war on Earth and keep them busy for years. Soong immediately recognizes it as mass murder, but Malik will not be dissuaded. Soong tries to order Malik back to the bridge, but Malik no longer has any fear or respect for Soong. Malik says, "What happened to you in prison? You're not the man who raised us, the man who was willing to do whatever was necessary." So we're starting to see.
But you don't know what it's like to be anally raped, okay?
Right. We're starting to see why these augments were not a good idea.
Yeah.
Because they view everyone as being so below them that there's no empathy. You know, yeah. And it's shit.
Superior.
And they actually get into that a little later, yeah, too.
Superior beings breed superior ambition.
Right. That is what they say. And pretty soon, I think, in Act 3. And Act 37, they'll say that. The Enterprise rescues the Denoblian and turns to finding the augments ship through enhancing the sensors. T'Pol takes the opportunity to try and talk to Tucker, since it seems like he had been avoiding her since her marriage. He admits as much and says it will take time for him to adjust. He also says he was proud of her for what she did. He also says that they wouldn't have made a good couple anyway, Vulcan and human. Just then a beep alerts. She didn't look like she fully agreed with him, but no. The saved by the bell kind of thing. A beep alerts the two to a subspace distortion 0.4 light years away. Tucker calls Archer to say they may have found the ship. Later in his quarters, Malik tells Persis in bed that he is ready to take command away from Soong. Persis is reluctant to go along, but Malik tells Persis that while Soong may have raised them, he'll never be one of us. Malik is angry that Soong will not be go along with Malik's play to use the biogenic agent as a weapon to launch the Klingons and the humans at each other's throats, protecting the augments from both. Malik tells Persis that Soong is altering the embryo's genome, making them weak and docile like ordinary humans. This is a change that Malik can't abide. In the end, Malik convinces Persis to go along with Malik's plans of mutiny, another one. This would be the second mutiny that he's a real shithead.
Yeah.
Not long after, Malik Persis and two other augments take Soong prisoner in his lab and lock him in his quarters. Enterprise is in Klingon space and is detected by another Klingon ship with a Klingon crew. I like they put that in parentheses. Just 0.3 light years away, with the universal translator updated to more dialects of Klingon, and the ship 2 minutes away from exposing them, Archer decides to try to fake his way out. He pretends to have Chancellor Marek on board for a classified mission negotiating with the Orions. The Klingon wasn't notified of this and asks why they don't have their official transponder turned on. Archer responds they need to keep a low profile and demand the Klingons not mention this to his superiors, threatening garbage scout duty. The Klingon appears to accept it, and the ship moves off. Reed is very surprised that worked. The whole exchange was actually kind of funny because the Klingon wasn't with it at first, and then it was all obviously audio only. And then towards the end, he was making little jokes like, "Oh, I heard about those Orions." You know, fucking stupid shit, dude.
Which is what you would hear, like, "Oh, I heard about his little affinity for the
broski shit." You know what I mean? And it was cool. It was a cool little scene. But Archer doesn't sound like a Klingon. His voice is too clean. Klingon's voices are usually very gravelly.
Yeah, but maybe it was auto-tuned in the communication. We don't really know what they heard, you know.
I'm a fellow Klingon like you. Walk find the quarters. Persis visits Soong and explains why she went along with Malik. Malik would have killed her if she hadn't. And she is right. Soong understands, then tells Persis that if Malik deploys the weapon, he will confirm what Earth has always feared about the augments. In the process, destroying them all, huh?
That they're dicks.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. That was the whole reason why he was trying to find peaceful solutions. Mm-hmm. And I think it was more he was trying to prove it to himself that they weren't capable of things that we already historically knew they were capable of.
Yeah.
Soong tries to plan some way to disable some key ship systems, but in the end, both Soong and Persis realize Soong needs to get off the bird of prey. Persis takes the internal system offline and helps Soong to leave an escape pod. Act 3. The Enterprise eventually picks up the pod's automated distress beacon, pulling the pod and Soong back aboard the Enterprise. He's taken to the brig where Soong sued fight. Oh my god, sorry. Where Soong finds it difficult to explain to Archer why he came back. I don't know why it was here. It was like a bit. But Soong starts talking like all passionately, and then Archer just puts his hand up like, wait, and then presses the button. I was like, I don't know why they put that in there, but it was so funny. I try to get Archer to stop. He wants to get Archer to stop Malik and his plans. In the end, Soong tells Archer about the 300 kilograms of biotoxins that are missing from Cold Station 12's inventory and that Malik intends to use them on the Klingon colony. Archer already knew about the loss. Soong tells Archer about Malik. Quote, "You saw what he did on the station. You know what he's capable of." Archer replies, "You didn't know. You had to see him murder someone in front of you." Soong tries to tell Archer that if Soong had been there for them, none of that would have happened. But Archer tells Soong that in the end, none of that would have mattered. It's in their nature. Superior abilities breed superior ambition. One of their creators wrote that. He was murdered by an augment. So yeah, and Soong already knew this. This whole augment thing was a flawed thing to begin with. And it's so funny how history repeats itself. And he's supposed to be one of the smart – the problem is he is one of the smartest guys in the galaxy at the point. But he's also – he's so smart that he's so arrogant that he'll fix it.
Yeah. Well, that's generally the thing, is that he's – oh, I can fix whatever they did. Right. And, you know
– and then it all happens again.
Yeah, you know? It blows up in their face.
Archer decides to believe Soong for the time being, and Soong is soon helping the Enterprise crew to track the augments in their bird of prey. T'Pol is concerned that Soong is leading them into a trap, but Archer believes Soong to get to the colony, the ship has to travel at a high warp speed that might compromise the phony warp signature. Back on the bird of prey, Malik confronts Persis in private, determining that Soong escaped with Persis's help. In the end, Malik and Persis have a fight, and Malik kills Persis with the Duck Tong knife, whatever, bitch. It's a Klingon knife. It's the one that you press the button and the little spurs come out on the side. As Soong works with T'Pol and Tucker, T'Pol detects a ship, a Klingon D5 class battlecruiser. Because of Enterprise's high warp, the ship has picked up Enterprise's warp signature and listening to their hail, obviously recognizes them as an Earth vessel. They demand they prepare to be boarded. Act 4. We're almost done with me just reading a story to you. So Archer tries to warn the Klingon captain, Mog, but he suspects it's a trick and that Enterprise is the real attacker. Soong addresses him in Klingonese, saying Archer... What?
I said I like this. Go ahead.
Oh, says Archer and crew are honorable people. Mog dismisses it and ends the hail. Yeah, he didn't even say, fuck off. Yeah. You know a little bit of Klingon? Like, what am I supposed to be, excited? Archer decides to... And I also never understand that in Star Trek. You got universal translators that are translating everything you say. If you say something in Klingon, wouldn't it just sound exactly the same?
Yeah.
Like, it never makes sense to me.
But I just, I like the way, I liked after he kind of just told him the fuck off, I like Soong, man, it was worth a shot.
Yeah, I tried. Yeah. When the ship tries to board Enterprise, Archer orders the ship's grappler to target its warp missiles. This was slick, too. Like, the stuff that Archer keeps doing is slick. The Enterprise goes to full impulse and eventually tears open a piece of the nacelle, disabling the ship. They continue on to the colony. Meanwhile, Malik's scans of the colony reveal three population centers, two in the southern hemisphere and one in the northern. Malik plans to detonate over the southern in order to maximize the number of casualties. What a sweetheart. Problems with the torpedo guidance systems and the appearance of Enterprise on their long-range sensors complicated Malik's plans. Problems with Enterprise's engines make an intercept with the bird of prey over the target colony problematic. Basically, we're waiting until the bomb gets to one before we turn it off. The ship is able to by the way, I watched Galaxy Quest recently. I just threw it on. And that part always gets me where they're trying to stop the thing and they stop it, but it keeps going and then it stops at one. I'm like, oh yeah, because it always stops at one on the damn show. This shit made me laugh so hard, dude. The ship is able to launch the bioweapon, but Enterprise manages to fire a trio of torpedoes, one of which manages to destroy the bioweapon. Just in time, baby. The bird of prey fires back, critically damaging most weapons. With only the aft cannon, Archer wants to target the bridge, but Soong helps him and explains the bridge is protected, but the primary power grid is vulnerable. Archer trusts him and orders it, disabling the ship. Surprisingly, Malik prefers to die rather than be captured and proceeds to overload the dilithium matrix. Soong pleads with him to stop, but Malik argues it's better to die there than be in prison. Soong, the bird of prey explodes. Kind of an unceremonial end to the augments. Soong, stunned at the loss, is escorted in handcuffs to crew quarters, this time for the trip back to Earth, as Archer tells him he will speak for him on his behalf. Malik drops from the ceiling. Richards immediately fires, but it does not stun him. Malik knocks him down and Archer, proceeding to kill Soong for betraying the augments. This is also Malik is such a fucking piece of shit. Like, he just blew up the ship. Right before he did that, Soong said some of your brothers and sisters are still alive. He kills them.
You're right.
Only to show up on Enterprise to try to kill Soong. I'm like, what's your end game here, pal? Like, I don't get it. You're just a piece of shit. As he holds him by the throat, Archer manages to kill Malik by blasting a hole in his stomach with Richard's particle rifle. Hardcore shit, bro. Back on Earth, Soong is taken back to his very clean cell. Soong remarks, you'd at least let me finish my work before you take it away and destroy it. Archer replies that none of his prior work during his time in prison has been destroyed and is stored in a secure location for potential future use. Soong doubts that will ever happen. Soong, now believing that humanity cannot be perfected, instead turns his attention to creating an artificial life form, though he doubts he'll finish the work myself. Might take a generation or two. Shit was bomb, dude. So, you know, not a perfect episode, but it had some cool callbacks. And you know, it was also the end of this not so great arc.
Yeah.
Background information. This is the last time Paul Sklar plays Mako R. Richards. Jermaine Soto will reprise the role in Babylon 1. Really? Which Mako is that? Mako, I don't remember. Cool. This episode concludes the Augment story arc. The scene of a gravely injured Malik crawling through the ruined bridge is slightly familiar and possibly an homage to a very similar scene with Khan in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I actually thought that too when I saw it. It kind of reminded me. I'm like, I wonder if they did that on purpose.
I kind of stopped caring at that point. So I didn't really notice the.
You've been very negative on these shows lately. Like just like fucking all the shows. This one, Orville. Just like I don't know. I didn't even finish watching it. Fuck that show. just not feeling it lately. The Briar Patch from Star Trek Insurrection is mentioned here by Eric Soong as a place of refuge for his augment children. Both Brent Spiner, who plays Soong, and director LeVar Burton had starred in Star Trek Insurrection. Soong also claims that the Klingon name for the Briar Patch is Klok Dakel Brak, which was mentioned by Kor in Deep Space Nine Blood Oath as a site of a great victory by the Klingons over the Romulans. What the fuck is the Briar Patch? Is it close to the neutral zone? Well, whatever. I'm not going to get into it. LeVar Burton had not directed an episode of Star Trek featuring Brent Spiner since TNG's The Pegasus in 1993. It must be fun. Like, because they were all, like, friends on the show, and now he's kind of the boss. So you better do what I say.
Don't fuck up.
Right. This three-part story arc established that the 22nd century genetic engineering was completely banned on Earth after the Eugenics Wars, which is understandable. Even for genetic research, which could be used to cure critical diseases. At the end of the story, Archer expresses his hope to Dr. Soong that research into genetic engineering that could cure life-threatening diseases would actually be resumed. According to Dr. Bashir in Deep Space Nine, Dr. Bashir, I presume, by the 24th century, genetic engineering was indeed used by that time to treat serious medical conditions, though trying to genetically engineer humans with superior abilities was still banned. I mean that makes sense, you know. Yeah. Like, let's at least get rid of the bullshit.
Let's at least put a cap on it.
Exactly. At the end of the episode, Eric Soong claims, I've been thinking perfecting humanity may not be possible. Cybernetics, artificial life forms, I doubt I'll finish the work myself. Might take a generation or two. This is a direct link to the Soong family's work in upcoming centuries, culminating in the creation of the android B4, Lore, Data, and Julian Trainer by his great grandson, Noonien Soong.
You don't say.
Juliana Trainer, sorry.
Wow.
You don't say. I always forget about her. The characters Khan Noonien Singh and Noonien Soong were both named by Gene Roddenberry for a friend of his, Kim Noonien Singh, with whom he lost touch after World War II. By linking the characters via Eric Soong, the Enterprise writing staff retroactively provided a possible in-universe inspiration for the later Soong's first name, although the implications of the descendant of an infamous criminal being named after an even more infamous despot are unexplored. This episode was heavily edited by Channel 4 when they broadcast it in the UK, removing the whole of the fight between Malik and Perseus and its conclusion. As a result, Perseus simply disappears from the episode without explanation.
Which would still be Star Trek.
Yeah, whatever.
The character disappears out of nowhere. Suddenly it's like, what happened?
John Billingsley called the episode making up the Augments arc some of the best work of the season.
Really?
Okay. You know, I mean, he would know more than us, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
The talk about the Botany Bay and Khan foreshadows the events of TOS Space Seed. Yes, it does. Steve already corrected me. This episode's ending on a positive note suggests that Soong may eventually be released from prison. No, it doesn't. At this point, it wasn't clear if he had fathered any biological children yet, as no existing family was mentioned. Continuity.
That's the thing, though, is that in every incarnation of Soong, we don't know if he had any children, but yet he always has a child. Somehow he always has a child later on.
You have to assume he did. Yeah. The universal translator does not translate the Klingon word kapla when the Klingon patrol ends the transmission with Enterprise. That's not a continuity error. It never does.
Yeah, because you always hear them say kapla.
You always hear kapla, which is like to victory or something. But I didn't hate these episodes as much as Steve did.
I thought
they were okay, you know.
I said I was over them. Because I got bored. That was the big thing is I kind of got bored with the episodes. Because they didn't lead to anything really big.
No, they were kind of like...
It was a family drama.
Like it was a family drama. It was one big slow burn. Yeah. And it burned into nothing. It just kind of fizzled out. This is probably my favorite episode of the three, only because it has all the callbacks in it. I just like that shit, but you know, whatever. Next episode, this definitely wasn't as bad as that fucking Orville episode. I'll tell you that much right now.
Oh God, no! I'd rather watch this three times than watch that Orville episode.
The next episode is The Forge. When Earth's embassy on Vulcan is bombed, the investigation puts Archer and T'Pol on the trail of a Vulcan religious faction hiding in a treacherous desert. I
got bored with the Augments, so I went ahead and saw the next episode. So much better. Really good episode.
Yes, C's been reading ahead on his homework lately, which is that's fine.
Because I'll watch it again before we do the show because I'll be reminded.
Exactly. I don't have that.
Except this episode. I didn't watch this a second time. The other ones I did.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just said the other ones I did watch a second time, but this one I did.
It cut off at the end. I thought you were still talking.
No.
This next episode is one of three for the arc of the Syrianites and five of seven of Vulcan versus Andoria. so that's I don't even remember when that started. I guess we're just – everything's an arc now. If it calls back, it's an arc.
Yeah, if it has anything it touches on this, it's an arc. It's like it's one of two. One of two. One time in season one and one time in season four. it's like, come on, guys.
But more importantly, next time on Star Trek. I think this one's gonna probably be better. I remember the arc where they explain why the Klingons looked more human like in TOS. I remember enjoying that.
Yeah, I think I remember enjoying that too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, my whole thing is that with this episode, it didn't go anywhere. It felt like it was building to something that never materialized or was never fully thought out. Because technically, the second and third part should be the more exciting pieces of a three-part series. Because you're thinking three-act structure. Problem was, episode two was probably the most exciting. Which is saying a lot.
Which makes no sense.
Right. Yeah. and part three really turned it into that family drama. And I mean, while it's cool because you're dealing with theoreticals from a story standpoint, it's like, why did we wait those? Not to mention the way it ended with Malik beaming on the Enterprise trying to stab him was like, that just to me seemed stupid. It seemed like a cop out.
I think this one too, it's definitely
we didn't know how to end it, so this is what came out. Exactly. It's kind of what I felt.
I think the problem too is it wasn't cohesive. Like, you could definitely tell these three episodes were directed by different people, or at least it felt that way, and each director wanted to do a different thing.
Which
and
we
they
know,
weren't sharing notes.
Which we know on Trek isn't really the case, because they kind of television isn't a director's medium, it's a writer's medium. If you want, when people sit there and go, oh, writers need to have a little more control, that's where you get into television, because writers tend to dictate television. Yeah. You don't get the chance to improvise lines like you do in that, because if you do, you have to go to the writers and then the writers have to agree to changing of a line. It's a total process. But what I felt with this one is that no one had, like, it almost seemed like this would be a cool idea, but nobody knew kind of how to handle it. Or kind of how to bring it. Or maybe they had an idea. Maybe it was like, oh, we can do this kind of big set piece kind of thing. And they're like, yeah, no, we can't. We kind of blew it all on Stormfront. So we can't really do it on this one. All right, well, then we'll try to make it all inbox in a Klingon ship. Because there was no external sets aside from the Klingon ship.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like, But
it's almost
like
we're saving money.
Yeah. Here, and to have Brent Spiner in there, you're like, oh, we got a TNG guy in here. So people are going to tune in. And the episode being kind of meh, it just really felt like a cheat. And I think that's why I kind of remembered this one. And I was like, but not having good feelings about it, like going into it and then watching and realizing why I don't remember. Because I remember the Forge, that story arc, and the Klingon one, and I remember those being good, as well as the alternate reality one that comes up later. Those ones I remember to be good. So, you know, it's kind of like,
well, the IMDb rating for this episode was 7.9 out of 10. So yet again, we don't know what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah.
So,
because apparently, you know, everybody else loves.
By the way, when you look at the cast, like the pictures of the cast and crew on IMDb. They're all very, you know, normal looking face shots. For some reason, Jolene Blaylock is literally DePaul in this image.
Probably because they never updated her picture.
Yeah. Linda Park. this photo. Okay. You know, she's looking a little nice in this photo, but, yeah, anyway, I don't even know why I brought that up, but yeah, it was fine. Like, for me, it was something that if it was back in the day and it was new, I would watch it, but I probably wouldn't remember it.
Yeah.
Like, I would just be like, okay, cool, Star Trek. I wouldn't be outwardly upset. You know, I'd just be like, okay, you know, whatever. Thanks for tuning in. You've ditched the ads and would like to stay independent. We can only do that with your support. If you would like to donate to make this podcast and all the shows on the Lazy Geeks Network self-sustaining, you can go to thelazygeeks.com and click on the donate button.
And if you can't help us out monetarily, we get it. But you can also share the show with your buddies and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you can. This will give us bigger exposure. All of this helps. Trust me. Just let it happen. Just let it happen.
Stop. You can check out our flagship podcast, The Lazy Geeks, where we discuss being a geek in an adulting world. Available where you found this one.
And if you want to be a part of the show, hit us up on the comments, questions, or if you have ideas for future episodes, you can go ahead and catch us up on the social media, you know, the Facebook, the Twitter, and the Instagram, all under at The Lazy Geeks, or email us themailbag@thelazygeeks.com. So that is it for us this week. So until next time, I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Two to beam up.